So let's say our opening prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Beloved David.
Beloved David.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Oh. Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.
Bliss.
Amen.
Amen.
A short meditation. Well, it's the day after Master's Mahasamadhi Day, 1952. And the day before Sri Yukteswar's. And interestingly enough, it's our grandson's birthday, Miles, in Florida with Angela's boy. He turned 12 today, I think. Kate, if you would start, I think we're going to do the next, at least three more classes on this. We'll do the foreword by David in part, and feel free to stop when you want to, Kate. And this should give us an idea what David was thinking. I was just reading today on OneNote where we have some of, what was I reading, an email? Anyway, where he was talking about that time, 2017 or so, and he was looking at Mother's work, getting ready for the Mystical Crucifixion book, or the, at least the books for Mother, and how much he admired her.
And we were fortunate in that he had prepared the introduction for a few of the books. So those books that we do that he has prepared an introduction for, we will put his introduction in, of course. So this is just a little quote of Mother's at the very beginning. "Certainly I did not reach my present state overnight, and I fell many times on the way, but my love for God and Guru was greater than my love for myself. And the day came, through God's infinite love and mercy, when I could finally give myself to him in full measure." And one other little quote of Mother's. "What I come to teach you is something that extends beyond religion, because God made man and man made religion. The answer to the truth is to be found only within yourselves." Forward by the Reverend Yogacharya David Higginbottom, Mother Hamilton's chosen spiritual successor. And then, as I just said, David had begun compiling material for this book before he left the body on July 12, 2019. He wrote this forward in 2017. That's what he just said. "The extraordinary life and teachings of the Reverend Yogacharya Mildred Mother Hamilton, nay, Mildred Marie Sayan, makes for compelling reading. In the Mystical Crucifixion, you will read in Mother's own words the tremendous spiritual experiences she was put through and the revolutionary truths that came about as a result. Mother's life story is intricately connected to the story of Jesus. And as you will see, Mother's understanding of the meaning of Jesus' life and teachings went through a complete transformation as she grew in spiritual and mystical understanding. A mystic's life is fundamentally different than that of most people. Ordinarily, we learn at the knees of our parents and family, go to school, and perhaps proceed to university studies. When we enter the adult world, we continue to learn through the experiences of life itself. We talk with others and form opinions and come to a worldview that is ideally both stable and open to new information. A mystic adds an entirely new dimension to this process of learning. That is, gaining access to information through intuition, which is not derived from books, discussion, cognitive thought process, or ordinary worldly experience. For a mystic, an inner life comes alive, in which powerful internal forces are released and result in direct revelations of truth. When taken to its ultimate conclusion, the mystic's life is transformed down to the foundational core of his or her being. Mother knew she was destined for something other than what she was taught when growing up. Spiritually, she was raised in the orthodox teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. Upon meeting her guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, her life underwent a dramatic change. Through his teachings, she heard for the first time that God was not some fearful being out there someplace, but a loving, knowable presence to be found within. Through the years, Yoganandaji, whom Mother lovingly referred to as Master, a spiritual term meaning one who has achieved self-mastery, wrote the Second Coming of Christ series in his East West magazines. The Second Coming, so long predicted, is not the Christ descending from the clouds bound up in the sky, but through the parting of the clouds of ignorance. Isn't that beautiful? This realization dawns in the individual and not as a singular global event. In fact, there have been second comings down through history for Christian saints as well as saints and sages of all religions from all around the world. This astounding teaching reached deep into Mother's soul and inspired her to sacrifice everything in order to have the highest realization of God. The fundamental change that occurs during the mystical crucifixion is described when Jesus refers to himself as both the Son of Man and the Son of God. Jesus knew that the Son of Man must be crucified and ultimately resurrected as a Son of God. The term Son of Man describes his human nature, the Son of God, the divine. The two natures are vital parts to Jesus' life in the scriptures. Every act of Jesus inextricably leads him to the crucifixion of the Son of Man and to the exaltation of the resurrected Son of God. This transformation from a lower human state to the higher divine one is what is encapsulated in the New Testament scriptures, what Mother calls the mystical crucifixion. There have been many interpretations of Jesus' life and teachings since the earliest days of the formation of what is today called Christianity. In the first 300 years, the multifarious teachings by those who followed in the tradition of Jesus the Christ covered a broad spectrum of thought. Then, through the insistence and enforcement of Emperor Constantine, a small portion of these teachings were incorporated into an orthodox system of belief. All other perspectives were declared heretical. However, believers who held with other ideas than the new orthodoxy did not see themselves as heretics. It was simply how they understood the teachings of the Master. Those heretics, in quotation marks, were either converted or they were tortured and killed, and their books burned by the emperor and his church. Today, many followers of the Christian faith accept church orthodoxy without question, or even an awareness of how these formulas were historically created and changed down through time. However, with Mother Hamilton, we have a first-person account as she walks in the footsteps of the mystical Christ. From direct personal experience, she describes what she went through and what God revealed to her. Her teachings make self-evident the inner meaning of the universal Christ. Universal because it is ultimately the story of how every soul progresses from the human to the divine, regardless of creed, nationality, or race. This makes Christ's life and teachings personal to every aspect walking the path of realization and relevant for all mankind, struggling to relate to these powerfully influential teachings that have so changed the world. So there's a little break there if you want to discuss anything, Larry, or should I go on?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to stop for initial thoughts if anyone has any. David gives such a wonderful introduction to the topic and even talks about what a mystic's life is, which he certainly lived himself and knew a lot about. We're faced again with the idea that the story is more important than the history. And the story points us to an inner experience, an inner realm of the body of the church, of the head of the church is the Christ, and that head of the church, as Mother always said, was our our actual head, our skull. And that is the role that Jesus plays too in the story. Christ is the head of it, the Christians say. Well, the higher centers is where the Christ comes into play. I was thinking the other day that the part of the story of Jesus is that at 12 years old, he's teaching in the temple, and they can't find him. And of course, that's the age, maybe 13, that people were accepted as being a man, and often were married in those days. People didn't live very long, so it was common to have two or three children before you were 20, maybe more. Made me think that more likely the story, if there is a historical aspect to it, and probably it follows some historical things, in order to, one of the reasons for historical things is because people in the time know of this history. And so it gives them something to, a context, from which they can see it. And so we don't really know what history is accurate enough, but it did occur to me. I know this is not new, but it did occur to me that this is the reason that he was gone for 18 years is he was, could well have actually, as a precocious person, left his family at that time. I know that at age 30, he stays working until he's age 30 in the general understanding, but it's also possible he could have traveled and taught. Started on his sadhana. These things are alluded to with the story of him being baptized. And the other thing that Mother brings to the story is the notion that the wedding feast of Cana is his own wedding, probably. Later, people maybe decided that celibacy was a requirement, and that they didn't want that story, so they had him doing all the things he was doing for someone else. But it's very vague, isn't it? It's a mystical responsibility is to delve into these things and to let nothing stand in the way. No dogma, no doctrines, no worries about other people's thoughts and other people's formulations. I really wonder if the people living in the 1700s understood Jesus the way that they did in the 1800s. And how about the year 1200? And how about the year 800? Did they do the sacraments the same way? It's always mystifying to me that the Jews used to kill animals and blood all over the place on the altar. How common that was. And we all blanch at the idea now. In Hinduism too. It all seems to be of a time period. And not with us now. Yet these are considered completely legitimate things. So a mystic is required to go beyond, to delve into the truth, not worrying about other preconceptions. Each person should figure that out for themselves, in the sense that many people, and most of us, are this way. We learn from a teacher and we accept that. But as you go through the experience yourself, and as you move in spirit, you're forced into experiences that you cannot explain in a doctrinal sense, in a dogmatic way. Each thing is unique and special for each person, but the doctrines just don't do a lot of good. And you have to abandon them. And then as the light comes, you then explain them in the way that fits into your own teaching. And this is what Mother has done. she then came back and taught us that these things are written down for a reason, and that there's a great truth hidden in the Bible. And that the key to unlocking it is to see what it's alluding to, not what is being said explicitly. The other job that scriptures do, as I've often said many times about the little flowers of St. Francis, is that these stories are so uplifting that you can sometimes hardly read them without just being transported into another world. It's a great insight that God gave me with that book. It's so, because I was reading it years ago and really being uplifted and thinking, well, these stories are clearly not true at all. They are not even intended to be recognized that way. These stories were told as much as 100 years later, maybe even more. But people had a feeling for St. Francis. They kind of had stories amongst themselves and ways of understanding him. So they told these stories. And what is the power that comes from a story that's not true? Does it point towards a higher truth is really what it comes down to. Is each person's life lived pointing to a higher? And the highest aspirations of each soul, is it pointing towards something about the character being going to the trouble of coming down to this earth and living here? There's something great in each of us and something very satisfying for each one of us. It's nice when you have a group of souls all on the same wavelength. But the mystic's life often is a lonely one. And you have to become comfortable with that. Are you being contrary or are you being independent? As David always said, you know, there's a dependence aspect to just being contrary, whereas interdependence is a positive thing to deal with people. But independence is necessary for the mystic, for this path that we're on. And then part of the joy is that there are other souls that you can share so much with.
Sorry, I'm in the dark here. I don't know how come, but I was just going to say...
What were you saying, Larry?
Yeah, right. That too. I was going to say it's interesting how we come onto this path. And in my case, you know, I'm in my 20s and having been raised Catholic, totally, you know, very different than Mother and David. And yet everything Mother says makes sense. And her experiences, which are so extraordinary, there's nothing unusual. We understand in some way, even though we haven't had those experiences, there's something that is totally, you know, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny. I never questioned Mother in that sense. I didn't think I had sufficient understanding to do so. But also there was what you're saying is true. I just thought they seemed to make sense.
Yep.
And it intrigued me because she brought in things, so many things that I'd never thought of or considered. And each one, as I added it to the shelves in my brain, seemed to fit and make sense.
Another thing you said, Larry, was that, you know, we kind of look forward to coming into this earth realm, but by golly, how could we look forward to this? You know,
I think of a young child. I think a child doesn't, the idea of having a child being suicidal and having existential angst. Now they can have worries. They can have they can be deeply distressed, but they cannot see themselves as something that could take their own life. This is an adult's notion. So it's really that way. We really come to this world with with no notion that we shouldn't be here and don't have a place here. It breaks your heart to see children who are orphans. It really does. Or who have parents for a short time and lose them. It's a really, really difficult thing. I think if there are any real rights as humans coming into this realm, it's the right to a mother and a father.
Well, I had a few thoughts while you were speaking, Larry. And as we were discussing about the mystic, and I had just done that article on Saint Bernadette, and that was what was interesting in that book that I read, that he immediately identifies her as a mystic. And it's partly, which I didn't put in the article, but because of the ecstatic states she would go into, but then also some of her understanding she had of what she was going through. But, and she must have come with that because she didn't, you know, she wasn't raised to have that. But, and another thing to bring up is that in this current Vision magazine, Swamiji introduces the whole month by saying how the practice in India, you know, the practice in the East of religion, as they practice it, especially, is that it's supposed to be, it gives one a lot of individual liberty to follow the path as you want to follow the path. And that's something that, that the path of yoga, I suppose you could say, brings to the aspirant. So there's that on the one side. There's the mystic, which is kind of the same sort of thing. And then there's also the seeing the place for and the beauty of people who are still following the Orthodox, where that seems to be needed as well. So it's kind of like we need our mystics and we need this other thing that keeps tradition going on, so that, you know, like when we were in Lourdes and we could see all this wonderful ritual going on and appreciate it and yet feeling outside of it, being in full approval of it, but knowing that we were outside of it. And it seems almost like society needs both.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the one comparison would be there's the people who raise the next generation. They have a responsibility to do that. So they can't just all be, they can't all just be people living in as a swami or a sadhu.
Well, I wasn't meaning those who kind of take an independent path like Mother has and have the teachings come from within. And everybody's not ready for that. And so that's where the orthodoxy is still really important to have, because otherwise they wouldn't have a place and they may go off who knows where, you know, into more destructive lifestyle.
Orthodoxy kind of creates a shelter while we're waiting to be called.
Right. And children need a structure too. So we can think of them as lower souls in kindergarten, grade school, high school, middle school, and college. Of course, that's Mother talks about that. This is school for souls. Mm-hmm. But there are noble, high souls in each of these areas too.
The problem, of course, you have the orthodoxy actually persecuting those who are mystics. of course, they're trying to find out who is real and who isn't real, but they don't always know. And so, what Padre Pio went through with when they were questioning him and
That's how you know who the real saints are, who's the who's being persecuted.
Yeah.
You know, though, it's funny, I used to read things that, of teachers and rectors and abbots and people of that sort who are truly highly realized. Mm-hmm. And would, now, the question comes then to address Kate's point. Are they flexible and knowing about the mystical world and accepting it, but also knowing what their job is as a teacher? And then having responsibility for many different types of souls, you create an atmosphere that's congenial for all. Those are really tough things to do nowadays. I've been just amazed that, you know, none of us in this group here agree on a lot of things. It isn't like we have a common understanding of the world. And so when you go further afield than just this small group, you know, it's how much is really shared. It's very, very strange how little, how independent and how isolated we are as individual souls apprehending this world.
But, you know, they tell us, Larry, that's an illusion, right? They say we're all God. So our perception of loneliness and being alone is a mirage. It's an illusion.
Try telling that to those people.
Well, I mean, if you get lifted up in meditation, you know, you feel quite one mm-hmm. with everyone. You know, it's been as extreme as me sitting across from you, feeling one with you. I mean, that's
poles apart and yet still able to look across the gap, the huge yawning gap.
Chasm. Exactly. Chasm. A chasm. Right. So I also just want to say that, you know, the Catholic Church gets this bad rap, and all anybody wants to talk about is priests molesting children. You know, that's like the favorite topic, but. I'm not Catholic. I wasn't raised Catholic, so I don't have, you know, a bunch of baggage. But what I always loved about the Catholic Church is their veneration of saints. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're still recognizing saints. You know, they weren't all 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago. I mean, Saint Teresa over in India, you know, was in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And there's other saints. And I love that the Catholics do that.
Yeah.
And that they recognize that, you know, this person has ascended to a higher state of consciousness, and look at their life, look at their visions, look at how they are visited by God. And what I love about that is it sets an example for the rest of us. You know, that, I mean, this person was a saint in really adverse circumstances. So maybe we can be like that too. And I love that they do that. So there's a bunch of stuff I love about the Catholic Church. And like I say, I wasn't raised there. You know, I didn't have the darshan of nuns whacking my hands with rulers or whatever everybody's complaining about. You know, I just like to take the good stuff. And, you know, they also know how to build churches. Oh my goodness gracious. You know, the best churches around. But I love the saint thing. I think that's pretty cool.
You know, it's funny,
Peter, not having been raised in it, I can just see the things that I really like about it.
Take the good stuff, you know, take the good stuff.
You know, it's funny. All of the nuns that I was around were just really lovely. I mean, there's some that were strict. But seriously, they were all the ones that I personally lived with. We admired them, and they were very sweet to us. And the priests in the seminary, though I had trouble with one priest, overall, my gosh, we're talking 10 people. They were exemplary, truly.
So you know what, Larry, I love hearing that, because all I see is the depictions in the movies and in stories of these terrible, horrible, mean people. And that's all we get. Yeah. You know,
we need to watch different movies, Peter.
Yes, I need to. Of course, you know, my entire reference is the Blues Brothers trying to tack down the Penguin. But I love hearing that you had a good experience, that they were sweet and loving. That's nice. And I'm pretty sure you were a handful.
Well, they didn't necessarily like me very much, but I can see it definitely that, their basic human, their nature was not predatory. None of them were predatory, even the one I didn't get along with in the seminary. Yeah. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. And when it happens, it's so egregious that we just have to bring it up. It has to be talked about, but it has to be brought in context for sure.
Well, the reason it's egregious is because it's a betrayal of trust. But
trust, yeah.
I mean, wouldn't it be nice to concentrate on the 90% or the 95% or whatever of well-meaning, well-intended spiritual souls, you know?
But the school for souls that we mix with in this physical world is pretty broad in that sense. But also, I really do put it to the yugas to make the most, so much sense that we literally live in a time when we have to have writing in order to pass things on. We don't have any psychic abilities. We don't remember you don't remember every whole conversation. So there are extraordinary people who do, but they're almost always have lost some other aspect of their personality or their character to become, you know, a savant or something like that. But this world that we live in here is really, you know, in a way, it is very lonely living in this world in the way that we do. We don't feel a tribal sense. And I think we're basically, the best way to handle this world is in a tribal sense. That's why it tends to be brought up. It happened a lot.
You're kind of losing on us, Larry.
Yeah, I just saw a little thing come up and say my signal is losing a little bit of signal, a message. So the voice or the voice or video or both?
The voice was a little off.
Yeah.
I just thought you were doing that with your voice, Larry. I thought that was kind of amazing.
This is a off this stream, if it's okay to ask something a little different. I think it's related. It came to me early on in your speaking, Larry. But the idea of Mother saying that David, and this was quite early on, but when he was made a minister, but quite early on in this lifetime, as far as his path, had been through almost everything Mother had been through.
Yeah.
And then to see him go through so much more. And I just wonder what you're thinking about that. And there's, part of it is that mysticism. Part of that is when you were talking about history versus truth and kind of how that mother saying that, if she was seeing what mm-hmm. was ahead for him or if she was talking about, you know, his soul's journey at that point. And I don't know that there's an answer for it, but
she must be pointing to other lifetimes as well, but of course, in the 70s and 80s, we did talk a lot about spiritual experiences, and he was going through a lot of things at that time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know in which way Mother really – she did seem to imply that he had just gone through it recently, you know, that he had come through it at least in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. But you never know with Mother if that's what she meant. She wanted to develop our – you know, to give something for him to stand on, that she's seeing him – as being a worthy person to be an authority on these subjects, having gone through them. The big mystery is that
that's true. And with one minister, when she was leaving and she wanted everybody to support him, and she said, well, it may not seem like he has been through all of these experiences, but he has been through it a lot in another lifetime.
Right.
And so
he lacked confidence because of that.
So,
right? He lacked confidence because of that. In a way, part of the setup that Mother gave or God gave was David was so far superior than him in that sense. Of having real inward mystical experience, a basis of that, and being brought through that. She lifted them both to the same height of esteem, to many respects, and the other minister was actually, you know...
really cutting out. Not sure what's going on.
Yeah, I don't see any reason for that.
Yeah.
Is it a mic?
I didn't understand anything you just said. Say it again, maybe.
I'm just trying to make sure. Is it the audio or video?
I think everybody can still hear me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Larry, Kate's is perfect and yours is not.
My what? Audio or video?
It's not the video, it's the audio.
Okay. Well, then.
It's also not the internet because obviously mine's okay.
Yeah, we're on the same
internet. You're just cutting out like that.
I think, Larry, when you lean back, then it seems to get worse. And then when you lean forward towards your computer, then it seems to get better. I'm not sure if that's right.
Where is that voice coming from?
Michelle.
Peter's teasing you, Michelle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Judy's
surprise,
in the,
surprise.
Judy's in the dark, but you're really in the dark.
Now, Larry?
Yeah, he's kind of frozen.
Yeah, yeah. Kate, you're frozen now.
Might be your earphones, Larry. We'll tell you when you're back on.
Again, audio or video? If it's audio, that makes sense. The video, you just froze. Your video just froze up.
Larry, Kate has been perfect for us the whole time. So there's something going on with your computer.
But we're on.
Kate hasn't frozen.
We're on the same internet, so I'm not sure. Anyway, the video freezing up is really critical because that's what takes the most bandwidth. You can't hear, huh?
Yeah.
It says your internet connection is unstable.
You are unstable, Larry, but Kate is not.
It's not fair.
Princess is fine. Maybe you have to come in here and join.
Yeah, it's funny, Kate. I can hardly hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now, how about that, Jill? How was Kate? Did Kate chop up for you?
Kate was fine the whole time. Not at all.
Now mine's saying
it's all on your end, Larry.
Yeah, it must be.
You're frozen again.
Sorry.
Why don't
we
go sit on
Kate's
lap?
Why don't we just have other people talk?
That's right. Yes.
Yes.
Kate, do you want to go ahead and do a little more reading?
I will. Yes.
Larry, you can move into Kate's room and then you'll be fine. See how Greg and I are sitting together? This is something you can try.
We could do it.
It is six steps away, I know. Mira's telling you too.
Yeah. That's right. I think you're right, Mira. Mm. Mother was born into a Catholic family, the only one of seven children to survive. Being very poor, the family circumstances were difficult. And Mother never had the opportunity to graduate from any school except a six-month business course. As a teen, she had read a novel, A Romance of Two Worlds, which supported her in thinking that there was more to this world than what is perceived through the five senses. As she matured, Mother made a life-changing decision to leave the Catholic Church. Her mother and father were definitely not happy when their only child left the church. In 1925, Mother was 20 years old and was invited by a co-worker to attend a lecture by a Hindu yogi. Meeting Swami Yogananda changed Mother's life completely, and from that moment on, she was an enthusiastic disciple of the yogi, who later was known as Paramahansa Yogananda. Needless to say, Mother's parents were distraught that Mother had a Hindu yogi as a guru. Little could they have suspected that Swami Yoganandaji would bring Mother closer to the living Christ than she had ever experienced during her time in the church. Her memories of early years in the Catholic Church were filled with the fear of committing a sin and what would happen if the church mortgage was not paid. Yoganandaji placed God right in Mother's heart and made her know that she could realize God and the Christ through direct inner meditational experience. Please do stop me if I start not being heard. Master brought to the West an Eastern view of an Oriental Christ, a universal Christ for all mankind. He spoke and wrote of his encounters with Jesus in glowing, inspirational terms. He brought a new way of understanding Jesus' life that appealed to logic. It made sense and set out in clear terminology that we are all called to a higher life by Jesus, and that his proclaimed brothers and sisters were all those who do the will of the one Father God. Master taught that in reality, we all have the innate capacity to know Christ consciousness, even as Jesus did. Through methodical meditation, as practiced by yogis, anyone who is willing to apply him or herself may have direct perception of Christ and of God. In a revelation to many, Yogananda's teachings would lead an aspirant to experience Christ consciousness through definite scientific methods, replacing the old formula of faith through belief. In fact, all of the teachings of Jesus point towards having transformative experiences based on deepened meditation upon God. This is the original Christianity that existed before being diluted by the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD and followed by other political spiritual councils, resulting in the orthodoxy of Christianity brought about by Emperor Constantine. Upon meeting Swami Yogananda, Mother heard, for the first time, that God was within her and that she might realize him through intelligent application of her will in meditation and by leading a spiritually attuned life. For 27 years, Mother followed her living guru and put his teachings to work in her life. Paramahansa Yogananda asked Mother to be a center leader for Seattle. Later, he ordained Mother as a minister, and then at a convocation in front of thousands, he gave Mother the ultimate spiritual title of Yogacharya, meaning teacher or master of yoga, one of six Yogacharyas in his worldwide organization and the only woman. In 1952, Mother's beloved guru left his body in yogic mahasamadhi, a yogi's conscious release from the body at the time of death. With an ever-increasing fervor, Mother had an overwhelming need to realize God and understand the truth behind the scriptures. It was her total loyalty to her guru and her tremendous desire for oneness with God that drove her uncompromisingly. In 1954, she entered a very high state of consciousness called Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Even in attaining that high state, Mother knew that she had not yet entered the supreme state of Sahaja Samadhi or Brahma Nirvana. She prayed deeply to God to either lift her into a fully realized state or send her someone qualified who could help her. At the same time Mother was going through these uplifted states of consciousness, the organization which Master had set up to oversee the publishing of his work, Self-Realization Fellowship, was busy making major rewrites of all his previously published materials, such as his Precepta Lessons, Whispers from Eternity, and the spiritual classic Autobiography of a Yogi. They even went to the extreme of forging his signature, changing the spelling of his name from Paramhansa to Paramahansa, with the added A, not only in the printed form of his name, but in an actual forged signature as well. There were also changes being made in the way the organization was being run. Mother was not in favor of the change in his written works, over 300 changes to the autobiography of a yogi alone, and she fought against them. As she said, she became the bad girl in the organization. Mother was experiencing an intense desire for God, and the desperate need to help to save her master's work. She fervently prayed to God to help her on both scores. In 1954, a fellow devotee of Master's, Bob Raymer, called to let Mother know that he had met an extraordinary Swami who was making a world tour and planning to come to Seattle. Mother subsequently met Swami Ram Dass several times. He spoke to the Seattle Center group, It proved to be a momentous time, a portent of things to come. When Mother met Swami Ram Dass, who was called Papa by all, through an extraordinary set of circumstances, Mother knew that God had sent Swami Ram Dass to her as the one destined to take her all the way to him. Subsequently, Mother knew she must go to Swami Ram Dass in India. In 1957, Mother and her husband Ralph sold all they had and left for India to be with Swami Ram Dass at Nandashram. They had no clear idea if they would ever return. Master was forever Mother's Satguru. Of that, there was never a doubt. However, Papa Ram Dass was to play a crucial role in the attainment of her complete realization of God. While in India, Swami Ram Dass put Mother through the spiritual experiences known as the mystical crucifixion, during which she received revelations about the scriptures, most especially the New Testament. Mother would be put through some very specific experiences. Then she was guided to certain biblical passages, and God directly instructed her as to how the inner meaning of these passages corresponded to what she had just gone through. In this way, she was given original Christianity as practiced by those early century disciples of Christ, but which had been lost when lesser minds codified faith through belief doctrine instead of direct knowledge of God through experience. So maybe we can stop there for a little bit again.
Yeah, it's a good spot. So Mother's sometimes told that story of going to Papa as though to get a realization and sometimes to get help with the organization. And she most usually would talk about it as though it was a both things were on her mind at the time.
And she brought her books with her. She was going to show Papa all the things that had been changed. And so she brought all those books to India with her. And then Papa just said, well, it's not your fight. But that really made me realize that was part of it, to bring all that as documentation to show Papa.
Well, I'm struck with St. Francis being kind of losing his position too, and that's what brought on the stigmata. So for Mother, similarly, she needed the one to gain the other. The fact that they're mixed together is not an accident. Although
to the having to give up the form, isn't there? The form of worship through the organization.
Right.
Christ had to give up the Jewish faith.
Yeah, very good.
And being charged with blasphemy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mother as well.
Yeah.
And yet one of the greatest things he taught on that in that sense was man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. Mm-hmm. That's a fundamental building block, or at least it's a viewpoint or a prism through which we can see what he's trying to teach.
Could Mother have brought, God can do anything, but could Mother have brought this forth still being constrained as part of the original organization?
Right. Well, she would have been very busy with the organization, just the ups and downs and different things there. I think too, like David's year of silence, that spending that time with Papa on a concentrated basis in a remote area, maybe writing letters, but withdrawing from her job and certainly from her actual life. That was a crucial part of it.
It seems a necessary thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's in every story. Christ goes into the desert. You know.
Yeah. For 40 days. Now,
willingness to give up everything. Give up your life.
Yeah.
For God.
But you know, we often see that as though it's just being coldly brought to you. Okay, I'm not going to promise you anything, but give up everything. Or we have an implicit promise that if you give up everything, you'll gain everything. And we're told that too. So
but it's
it doesn't
not,
make it easy. It doesn't make it easy.
Well, and it doesn't, it's not a tit for tat. It's
no.
All I want, the only thing that I want. None of the rest of this has any meaning anymore.
Well, wasn't that Papa's exact path?
Yeah.
He had to walk out the door. He had to leave his family. To leave everything.
But he didn't, but that's where it's a little bit, that's a little bit reversed. He didn't, it wasn't.
He was directed to by God, and all he wanted to do was follow God's will. It's not that, wanted to wander around India. It was that he was operating under God's direction, and that's what God had him do. So, I mean, I agree, Jill. It's not like, oh, you have to leave your family. The essence is following God's will, whatever that may be. For another,
nothing else matters.
Right. For another, it might be a householder. You know, I've got a friend that he would just as soon be an ascetic. And yet he's a householder, and his job in this lifetime is to raise children and be a husband. So it's funny because it's sort of almost the opposite of Papa's path. And that's what he's doing his best to follow God's will. And that's his lot in this life. So I think oftentimes what God has us do is against our first, our first impulse.
But you know, we don't step out in with no assurance from God. In reality, all of the great movements of spirit are so overwhelming that you really look back and you say, well, yeah, I did all those things. I was, able to, as Papa talks about, go in, be freezing and still stay awake doing Ram Mantra. The circumstances were that his inner life wasn't like he had alternatives. So in a sense, but also that it is so overwhelming that you really don't know what you're doing when you're going through it, and you don't look on it as a Herculean task that you've done well. In fact, one of the aspects of the Kundalini and the crucifixion is personal stuff. It's really hits you right at the ego. So it's often depicted and dressed up in a different fashion. Well, and we have to be strong people to be able to go out and do all that. Well, once you go out and do all that, then you become strong. And if you don't have enough strength, you won't live to do it. But the people who do live through it and are prepared in this lifetime to go through it in that way, this is in the offing too. And many people do go out into the sadhu realm in India too soon, just because they're having a hard time in their life and they abandon people they shouldn't. So there is that risk also. And the idea that it's supposed to be hard isn't the only criteria. It's also supposed to be overwhelming, forced into things.
What I loved about what Kate was just reading is, thinking of Mother, when she first met Master, it's interesting because since the 1960s and the Cultural Revolution, we think of having a guru maybe as a cool thing or doing yoga as you're really hip and you're with it. Well, I just keep trying to imagine back to 1925 when the conventional religions, the traditional religions were so strong.
Yeah.
Here you are in America and you decide to follow this long-haired man in saffron robes from India, you know, people must have thought you were a little cuckoo, like, you know, there wasn't this big movement today. And so I admire Mother's strength in that regard. So I can see where that inner conviction that she had really served her well. And then when she was in conflict with the organization and she differed with them and she ended up having to leave, that also was her that really well-developed strong will determining what was right and doing it even under really adverse circumstances. So what I always loved about Mother is that insistence on doing the right thing regardless of this storm around her of dissent and pushback and what I always think in terms of in that is great gratitude, because we're the beneficiary.
No.
Her fighting spirit and her intense insistence on doing the right thing and following God no matter what. And she talks about that, you know, with, you know, say the truth and let the chips fall where they may. And I just always thought, you know, with her in your corner, boy, you had a giant on your team, you know. You had a real advocate. And I just always felt so dang lucky to have her. You know, she is very strong and very strong in doing the right thing and admonishing us to do the right thing. And what more could you ask for in a leader, in a spiritual leader, in a guru? And she did it. She proved it at every turn. You know, it was following Master in the first place. It was doing the right thing in spite of what the organization wanted to do, his organization, the organization he started, the official doctrine. And she went against it. And then the entire time I knew her and was around her, she fought against bodily ills and physical setbacks. And she was just the very fact that she was up there behind the pulpit when she was so diminished physically, she could barely stand, and she showed up to minister. And you know, you just can't have a better example than that. And then you look at your own little excuses for not meditating or not doing the right thing or not putting your mind in the right spot, and you think, my goodness, look what Mother went through. Look how she fought, you know, to lift us up at every turn. I guess maybe I can do a little more, or try a little harder. She was as big as they get.
God's littlest child.
Yep.
And just tonight I realize what a blessing it is that Mother didn't start an organization, because this could have happened all over again.
Amen.
Yeah.
And I was also thinking just right now about how, you know, when David said, and then Mother went through the mystical crucifixion, like that is a term that everybody in the world knows. That's Mother's term, the mystical crucifixion. That's not just a generic term at all. And if you think about what, I mean, I just talked about how, you know, that orthodoxy can be a good thing for those people. But in terms of an organization that, that started out to have everybody be able to reach their own realization, it became fairly set in its own orthodoxy, where, you know, ministers would get up and they would just read the sermon that Master had already written, or, you know, and kind of go through all the prescribed order of service and everything. And And what Mother would get up and say would probably be very different than what one would hear in a self-realization church. So.
Could you read that very first piece that you read from Mother from the book? The very first paragraph again? Mm.
Certainly, I did not reach my present state overnight, and I fell many times on the way. But my love for God and Guru was greater than my love for myself. And the day came, through God's infinite love and mercy, when I could finally give myself to Him in full measure. Was it that one, Jill, or the next one?
Yeah. Well, and you could read the next one, too.
What I come to teach you is something that extends beyond religion. Because God made man and man made religion, the answer to the truth is only to be found within yourselves.
Giving ourselves fully to God and finding God within ourselves. And doing it together.
I was thinking too, you know, I'm getting little insights here, that no wonder we loved instantly what Mother had to say, because she told us God was within us. We'd never heard that before. That's so huge. I mean, how could we not want to hear everything she said? You know, so beautiful.
Anybody else have any thoughts?
I've had some thoughts about the introduction in Mother's life and also connecting them to the discussion of the Catholic Church and, you know, the mention of the disgraces of parts of the Catholic Church. And something that keeps coming up to the forefront of my mind is that the Catholic Church was highly involved, excuse me, in the boarding schools and residential schools for Indigenous people here who had, you know, many different, varied, beautiful spiritual beliefs of their own already. And the taking of children away. And it all started when Larry said that's the right of every soul to come here is to have a mother and a father. But that practice of, trying to erase the culture from Indigenous children by taking them away from their families and essentially making them Catholic, but amidst lots of unmentionable brutality. And there were, you know, you mentioned that children don't have the concept of taking their own lives, but many did in those schools. And, I was thinking like, it dawned on me that this is connected to Mother's own life. Many people came out of those experiences in residential schools or boarding schools with addictions. And Mother's own father had that problem as an Indigenous man. And that affected Mother. It affected her upbringing. It affected her, you know, they were poor. They were, you know, affected her. It helped build who she was, a fighter, you know, and a lot of people don't come out in that way, but she did. But I don't know that I have a deep meaning of all this connection, but that just, it felt like it needed to be said that there's this influence on mother's own life. That was related to a one of those darker aspects of the Catholic Church.
And certainly mother didn't go to a lot of, pilgrimage sites in Europe and talk. I mean, she talked about some of the saints, but it wasn't, she didn't go back to the Catholic Church and she didn't, you know, so that, you know, we can look at the church now that maybe it's not as involved in some of those things that it has been in the past. And so it can look a little bit more cleaned up and stuff, but it does have that past in it. And when you get an organization that big and that powerful and that wealthy, it can do a lot of what it wants, you know.
Yeah, and yet there are beautiful, beautiful things that have come out of the Catholic Church, and many Indigenous people that I know are faithful, devout Catholics. Mm-hmm. And so they found this beauty in that and cling to it and mix and combine it with their own spiritual beliefs. Mm-hmm.
You know, from the impulse at the higher levels was they were dealing with a lot of drunkenness on the reservations, and the children were really suffering as a result.
That was the cause of the drunkenness on the reservations, is what I was mentioning. That the brutality that happened by being taken from their families.
But I'm saying if you go back, I mean, the Catholics were involved in since 1500 really in the North American continent. And they had, when they introduced alcohol to these people, it really changed them dramatically. And, so they initial good impulse was, well, we just need to save the children and bring them up without, well, it's not an issue. It's a physical thing, and damaging them with regard to their parents this is the thing they didn't know, that they would do much more damage, even though the damage is bad the other way in that tribal sense. The best thing they could have done is get the alcohol out of there, because this was at root the problem, and the solution turned a lot of children over to people who were predators. The intention wasn't necessarily bad, but it was a very wrong thing to have done, because it hid a lot of these things too.
But there's a lot of when people get together in institutions become a thing.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up in the Catholic Church, and it felt like I was in recovery when I was coming out of it. And then I went into another institution in my work life, child protection, and that was a whole toxic institution. The people on the front lines, and the same in the Catholic Church, there's individuals who are fantastic, but there's just something about, you know, the higher ups and decisions coming from the top down, and the top not being in touch with the front line.
Right. Right.
It's just become such a mess.
Yeah.
Like David said, when two or more are gathered, there's politics, you know, and if you don't have that pure leadership like we had from David and Mother, where someone we trust is in charge, that's the only model that I've seen that seems to work when people are in groups.
You know what's funny, Geraldine, is SRF's approach. Master created so many, he helped create, I mean, God did it, but so many great spiritual masters. And we know many of their names. One I just discovered recently, and I bought a book about him, is Dr. George. Has anybody heard of him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Out in Milwaukee, and he's, you know, good friends with Bob Raymer. And this was a highly, highly realized soul. I mean, people would just get around him and be completely uplifted. he's one of Yogananda's disciples. And he, in fact, Yogananda told him, he said, you know, you're so highly realized, you need a title. You know, you need to call yourself master or doctor or something. And he said, okay, I'll be a doctor. But, you know, we know about Mother. We know about the different Yogacharyas and so many, many great realized souls. And yet SRF's official doctrine is that there's no masters after Yogananda. And there can't be any. And I'm thinking, well, it's so ironic. I mean, he comes from a line of gurus, you know, and he venerates his line of gurus.
Yeah.
And the entire point is to create more God-realized masters to go out and lead the world and be an example to all of us. And that's exactly what Yogananda did. He was such an incredible master that he had several, you know, were the great beneficiary of this continued line from Mother to David, both tremendous God-realized masters. And so I think when I think of SRF, I just think of the great irony of their doctrine of, okay, there's not now after Yogananda, there's not going to be any more masters. It's the exact polar opposite of what Master was, spent as actually his entire life, you know, his work.
As David said, too, is that would Yogananda go to SRF to get his realization?
Right.
You know,
and no matter how highly developed you become in SRF, you can't ever be put forth as a realized master.
I think they'd accept realization more than they would the title guru, but yeah, you're right. And the whole point is that when you attain realization and you interact with people who want to be your students, you're a guru. It's a structural thing. If you're still alive and you're fully realized, people are going to be attracted to you, and you're going to play the role. The energy, the Shakti, everything will flow from you to others. Has nothing to do with who decides in the board of directors what a guru is. Yeah, it's very sad.
Well, it's ironic, and it speaks to this whole idea we're having, this conversation about what an organization kind of does to.
Yeah. Otherwise, we don't need one.
Spontaneous upliftment, right? Exactly.
Well, you guys, Brother Achalananda, whom I met a few years ago, has taken on that role. But, you know, again, they're not giving him the title. He's like the spiritual head. But he told me himself that, you know, he's playing that role, taking on devotees.
Well, Yogacharya Black certainly did, and of course Mother did. And Yogacharya Black actually stayed inside the organization. So I think Roy Eugene Davis similarly.
Yeah, there's many.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, our best example is our own Mother Hamilton. I mean,
yeah.
In my mind, there's, you know, I just never been anybody greater, and in Master's estimation as well.
Well, many people get benefit from SRF and with Ananda, and so it really, there's a place for all of these things, and it's too bad that and we feel it too, that this kind of anger about the situation, but
you know,
yeah, honestly, it's part of the process.
Anger, because I feel like somehow or another we're the beneficiaries, and I think that things just kind of turned out exactly the way that they should have. Once Mother was out of the organization, she had no one to answer to but God, her own conscience. She could teach the way she wanted. She could write what she wanted. She could, you know, there was no headquarters telling her what to do other than God himself, you know. And I think it all just turned out just fine. So I don't think we need to be angry or resentful or anything else. I think, you know, the best use of our energy is get after it.
Different things for different people. Certainly, being in an organization like SRF for some people is very uplifting and very satisfying. So it's just, you know, you're right. We're just so lucky that we have the history behind Mother's story and David's.
What's also enormously gratifying is you realize you don't have to have any certain kind of personality. You know, Mother was very different than David. Different teaching styles, different personalities, different paths, and those two very different from Master. And
we see it, Swami Sachidananda and Papa and Mataji, all very different personalities and strong personalities.
Gives a little bit of hope for the rest of us, no matter how uniquely beautiful our own personality may be. We can do it. You know, we can go. We can be with God.
Special edition ROMs.
Exactly, Joshua. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Special edition ROMs. Where would we be without them?
They love that at the ashram. I spread it all over India. ROMs everywhere.
That is awesome.
Even when Master was still alive, he had given spiritual recognition and to like Gyanamata for devotees to come to her in his absence because he trusted her fully as impartial and directed by God.
Yeah. And Rajasi also.
And Rajasi,
And Dr. Lewis.
So he shows that there's, you know, this passing, he's not the only one, you know, these people have this capacity too, that he trusted that they would share his own ideal. Well, I've just been reading the God Alone, A Life and Letters of a Saint, Sri Gyanamata. It's so beautiful.
Isn't that tremendous? I think she wanted to sleep in the laundry room or somewhere. You know, he was always trying to do nice things for her, and she was just this wonderful spiritual ascetic. He has so much respect for her.
Yeah. The perfect devotee.
Yeah. Well, it's...
What do you think, Larry?
Almost 9 o'clock. So I think we'll continue this next week, and we'll go into, we'll finish the foreword here, and then we'll go into Mother's preface, and then we'll do chapter 1 and 2, just because I think what is interesting about dealing with this material is that as we revisit, when I've read this probably 3 or 4 times, and each time I hear it, and someone else reading it seems to help too, that I hear it differently. So it's very powerful.
But Judy, are you in the witness protection program?
Say that again. What a character you are.
You do look like you're trying to hide your identity.
It's so strange, you know. I've just graduated to accepting Zoom, and God decides to
hide
tonight. That's funny.
At least you're not hiding your light, Judy.
Really? Yeah, you're right. It's right over there. I see it.
When you first started talking, you said, well, I feel like I'm in the dark around here. I thought you meant that you weren't understanding what Kate had just read and what we were talking about. And then I look up and I see, oh, you really are in the dark.
Well, I
not everything is in parables.
Yeah, right. I am in the dark in lots of ways. But I see a glimmer.
I can still see your smile.
That's what I can see.
Crazy, crazy, eh? I had no idea this was going to appear, but you never know with Judy. She's not computer savvy, not even a little bit. That's okay.
Judy, I think it's because the light is behind you. It takes away from you. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, I know. It's embarrassing.
No, it's fine. Not. If no, it's put... not, Judy. It's not embarrassing. It's just how it is. Yeah.
Well, and God had us at all the other ones. We were all
all, you know, lifted up in meditation, and here we're all cracking up. So it's a, it's an interesting change.
Well, let's say Mother's Prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
My communion with thee.
I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Amen. I'll play some music and people can come and go as they want, about 5 minutes or so.
Oh, Jesus is calling, calling for you and for me. See on the portals, he's waiting and he's watching for it's called.